So, topic for this week for Parsha Shmos is, as I put it on the sheet, Miriam the Fearless, model of Emunah. So, yeah, we should probably put them there. Hopefully people will take these chairs. So I started with just an excerpt from an essay on Miriam. This is a fictional essay on Miriam, but it's someone who describes going through the Yam Suf with Miriam. And I brought it for a particular reason. Take a look here at number one. Who else would have thought to giggle as we navigated the slippery, sparkly floor of the canyon cut through the sea, while the rest of us were filled with fear and wonder? That was how I found her, in the crush of Levites churning through a moonlight-streaked tunnel. 11 other tribes skidded through tunnels of their own, meeting at liquid intersections amid wet clusters of sheep. There she was, my fearless Miriam, testing the fizzing sides of our God-made labyrinth with an elegant, playful finger, wanting to know if it made a noise, dot, dot, dot. It's this clearly fictional essay trying to imagine what it's like to go through Yam Suf with Miriam. It pulls from Medrash a little bit, right? You notice the reference to each Shevet having its own tunnels, which is a Medrash that actually built on a Pasuk in Yeshaya, but that's another story. It, on the other hand, ignores certain other aspects of the story, like the fact that it's supposed to be dry when they go through. The Pasuk says they go Becharava, they go on dry land. But that's not really the point here. The reason I bring it is because of the description of Miriam as having no fear. Everybody else is going through the Yam Suf filled with fear and wonder, and she is giggling. I don't know if that fits at all, your image in your head of Miriam. Well, I'm asking you, does that fit your image of Miriam? I mean, keep in mind she's 86 years old when they cross through the Yam Suf, right? Because Moshe is 80, and Aaron, as we know, is 3 years older, and we believe that Miriam is 3 years older than Aaron. So,
but how much do we know about Miriam anyways? I don't think we're given that much description of her to know her character.
We actually get quite a bit of description of Miriam. Not at this stage in Chumash. At this stage we know very little, although we know some. But by the time she's done, Miriam has more real estate, so to speak, in Chumash certainly, but even in Tanakh, than most people.
In Tanakh?
Yeah, there are quite a few. As we'll see. That's our job this morning. But yes, we see quite a bit about Miriam. But when I think of Miriam, I definitely think fearless. I think that's certainly true. The giggling, not so much. There are no giggles in Miriam. She's not. She could have had a sense of humor, but it doesn't show up in the Torah. No, she's not a frivolous person at all.
But I agree with Zian. I feel like, to me, I viewed it as a musical aspect, that she led them through the trumpets and singing.
Right. So that makes you think what?
She's very joyous. She's laughing.
That's more like leadership thing, but that's what the giggle. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's a little frivolous.
I mean, the song is a song to Hashem of praise. It's not exactly what I would think of as a lighthearted song. We don't get the whole song. We don't even know exactly what it was that they sang. Whether it was just Shiru Lashem Ki Go Gaha and Suswa, in other words, we get that opening line, and then we don't know, were they echoing everything that Moshe did in Az Yashir? Was this a different song? Was it one line repeated over and over? We don't know.
Maybe this is part of a leadership role. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, just part of their genetic makeup, where they all took over some sort of Kohanim, Levium, Moshe Rabbeinu. So she's kind of, they're nervous. They don't know what's going on. Oh my gosh. Don't worry, I'll take care of it, I've got you. Almost that character trait.
So there's definitely a leadership role to it. I wouldn't put it as being in their genes, just because we find that leadership roles tend to be handed out in Chumash based on your family, as opposed to based on your traits.
Characteristic.
Right, but what I mean is there's no casting call. There's no casting call of, let's see who's qualified to do X. It's more, you're from Levi, therefore you're going to have these positions. That type of a thing. It is true that when you get to building the Mishkan, it seems to be more merit-based. But Salal emerges out of nowhere. Aliyah emerges out of nowhere. So maybe I should modify that somewhat. Don't know really how Nassim gets elected. We aren't given that information. So it could be. But we're going to see Miriam over and over again in stories largely from the Chumash, in one case amplified a lot by the Medrash, that Miriam is definitely fearless. That we know. And the very first time we find Miriam, and this is the Medrash helping us out, is the story of Pua, Shifra and Pua. And I brought you the Psukim in source number 2. Vayomer melech Mitzrayim lami aladosa ivrios, asher shem achaz Shifra v'shem eshen is Pua. The Egyptian king tells the Hebrew midwives, Shifra and Pua, when you help the Hebrews give birth and you see the child emerging on the birthing table, in vain hu bahamitena, so if it's a boy, kill him. And if it's a girl, then she should live. Vatirena hamialdos eso elokim. The mialdos, the midwives, revered Hashem. Veloasu kasher diber alehen melech Mitzrayim. And they didn't do what the king had told them to do. Vatachayenas hayeladim. And they kept the kids alive. There's a lot of debate as to exactly what happened. Because vatachayenas hayeladim sounds like they actually did something actively to preserve the children. But that doesn't fit. Because when the king calls them to account, he says, why are you keeping the kids alive? They say to Paro, we can't help it because before we even arrive there, they've given birth.
How would you say that in Hebrew, they let them live?
I wouldn't, but I would say that they didn't kill them. In other words, vatachayena sounds active.
Or did they kill him after birth?
Right. So that's the way the Mefarshim go with this, is as Adina suggests, which is to say that the whole point of Paro's decree, or not the whole point of Paro's decree, but the idea in Paro's decree is that this has to be done in a way that isn't obvious. Mm-hmm. Once the kid is out, it's too late. And therefore now, they maintain the children. So vatachayena will be, we get there, the kid's already born, and now they're keeping them alive. And he's saying, well, what happened? Why did you get to that point? And their answer is, because we weren't there in time.
How were they supposed to kill them?
I'm covering the mouth, probably. It doesn't specify. Asphyxiation, it would be, you know, I think what, probably what he's talking about here, but I don't, I mean, if he wants it not to be detectable, I would assume that that's what, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, he wants them to, like, break their neck.
Well, that I think will be detectable.
Before they were actually born, like, before they actually came out.
As they're emerging.
Well, why didn't he hire more than two? If there are so many giving birth six at a time, and...
Right.
Right.
Right, so the question there are a lot of logistical questions in this story. Like, are there really only two? Are these the head midwives? Are these just two of the midwives who in fact disobeyed? Also worth noting, although generally not the way we approach the pasuk, but it says, Lami aladosa ivrios, there are those who suggest it's the midwives of the Hebrews, that Shifra and Pua are not even Jewish. Obviously, that's not where we're going with this, because we're going to call Pua Miriam. But they suggest these are the women who help the Jewish women give birth, which makes sense from a story perspective. Because would he really go to Jewish women and say, do this? It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. That he would, I mean, it does make sense, but in a very brutal way. Right, it makes sense in a very brutal way. Yeah.
Was this after Amram had already separated from Yocheved?
Unclear. Well, no, I shouldn't say unclear. The answer is it would seem to be yes, after they've already separated, simply because this is supposed to be the reason for their separation. Uh-huh. Right?
So
is the decree that
they
should
not. Isn't there like a medrash also that Miriam was the one who said that they should get back together? Was that her or somebody else?
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Uh-huh. Yeah. So take a look at source number 3. This is the Gemara in Sota on this story. Pua zu Miriam. Pua is Miriam. V'lama nikra shma Pua. So why is she called Pua? Shaisa Pua. Because she was Pua, and in parentheses in the Gemara, Motzia es Havlad, and she produced the child. Usually when a word is in parentheses in the Gemara as opposed to brackets, it means that it's not meant to be there in the text. I didn't even translate it there. But Pua was that she cooed to the child. It's a way of getting the child to calm down. Davar acher, alternatively, Pua shaisa Pua beruach hakodesh. Alternatively, she spoke with ruach HaKodesh Ba'omeres Asida Imi Shetelet Bein Shemoshia Es Yisrael. My mother is going to produce a child who will save the Jews. So we have two explanations now. Pua is the way that she takes care of the kids. Pua is her nevuah that she has, which the idea here, you know, why Pua? Why not Omeret or Medaber, like call her Devora for, you know, Daber or something like that? I think the idea is that it's a calming thing. Just like Pua is to calm the child, she's calming everybody with her nevuah. And that's where we associate the word Pua specifically with this nevuah.
Yeah. Pua is some kind of calming speech. We don't know that word really.
Right. And the answer is yeah, that seems to be. Right. The term in general, lifa peya, peyayin, is associated with something that is bubbling, something that is making that kind of a noise. There's a related word, ababuot, the shechin in Mitzrayim, and it comes up in other contexts, and it's also like to bubble. So I think that's the association where you get this kind of sound, because you're right, yeah, this is an odd word. This is not your standard word. But take a look at number four, where you get a third explanation. The two that we saw in the Gemara there are familiar, I think, to many people, but the Sifri gives a different explanation. Pua shaisa pua ubocha al achiha. She was crying for her brother. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, vateisatzava chosomei rachok l'deyam mayaselo. She stood there by the water while Moshe was put in the water. A story that we're going to have to come back to. So, what's the evidence that she is pua? Like, what's the basis for saying that pua is Miriam? I understand that the word pua may reflect the job that's being done. That I get. And I even understand why I would assume that the word Shifra and Pua are actually titles for their job instead of who they are, because we don't know anybody by this name. These are clearly people of some standing, but we never meet them. We never meet a Shifra, we never meet a Pua. And the Torah acts as though we know them. The Torah acts as though these are people you should know. Like, here they are in the story, and they're interacting with Paro, and of course, you know, I don't know them. I don't know. I've never met a Shifra or a Pua in Chumash. So I think, in part, that's what drives this. The names are odd. They don't appear anywhere in the lineage, and the Torah acts as though we know them. However, the fact that we tie it to Miriam, it may also be because what we're seeing here is going to fit her personality. It's gonna fit what we're gonna come to see about Miriam's identity in general. But we are introduced to Miriam here as Pua, again, assuming that this really is Miriam, which is, you know, the assumption that Gemara and the Medrash are making. And we're seeing her, along with Shifra, who we understand to be Yocheved, defying Paro.
Wouldn't she be only six?
Would she be only six? Give or take, yeah. Why is that odd? Why does that bother you? Right, but keep in mind, historically, people at the age of six were actually apprenticed out to work. That's not a hypothetical. That's the way it is. When you look at Sifrei Halacha going back 500, 600 years, not that long ago in terms of human history, and they talk about how old or how long you have to support your children. To what age is there an obligation to financially support your children? The answer is the age of six. Because at the age of six, they're expected to be apprenticed to somebody who's going to now have the responsibility to support them. So, like, having her helping out her mother would not have seemed the least bit odd to the Gemara in Sota.
All right, she's helping her mother. Okay.
Yeah. It still sounds funny to me, because yes, I've seen my kids be six. Nonetheless, that was their world. So that's in terms of your first story. Your second story also draws heavily on Medrash to support it, although here it's a little bit more clear. If you take a look at number five, Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, vayikach es bas Levi. man from the house of Levi marries a woman from the house of Levi. Much discussed the question of why there are no names, right? It's very funny that the book is called Shmos, and there are no names in the beginning of it. The classic explanation is to say that in every generation, people should see themselves in these roles. You shouldn't think this happened once because they were Moshe and they were Aharon and they were Miriam and no one, Amram and Yocheved and so on, and no one today could do it. No, these are roles that in every generation you're going to be called upon to fulfill. That's one explanation. There are others. But man from the house of Levi marries woman from the house of Levi. Vatar ha'isha vatelet bein. She becomes pregnant. She has a baby boy. Vatera oso ki tov hu. She sees that he is good. Vatitzpineu shlosha yirachim. And she hides him for 3 months. And of course, that goes on to be Moshe. That's our pasuk here. What's going to bother the Gemara we are about to read? What do you already see here that's going to be strange?
What, keto?
Ketofu?
Well, okay. I mean, the Medrash does deal with the question of ketofu, and it answers that that's the idea that that when he was born there was light in the house, or that he already had a bris milah, some sign that he is something great.
Well, the, because Amram and Yocheved, this is not the first time he's marrying her, so...
Right. The problem that you have is that Moshe has older siblings. What do you mean, a man from the house of Levi married a woman from the house of Levi? What happened? They were already married. Yeah, that's where it's coming from.
He married her and then raped, and there's other stories, and then they also had a son.
Yeah, does it sound like that?
No, but...
Not in the least.
All the time.
Are Aaron and Miriam's births recorded?
Nope. We don't get any reference to it. That's one piece. Jump down to number 8, and you'll see another problem. This is after the Jews cross through the Yamsuf, after Moshe's Shira. Vatikach Miriam hanabiyah achosa aron esatof biyada. Miriam takes a drum. Vateitzenachal anashem achara besupimu b'mucholos. The women follow her with drums, and they dance in their circles, and she sings. Do you notice anything odd about the description of Miriam here?
I think that Moshe would be like the greater
sister of Aharon, right? Moshe just sang this big song, right? But she's the sister of Aharon. That's problem number one. And number two, also in the same thing, in the same sentence. What else is interesting? Yeah. She's in a viyah. That's mentioned there as well. Which, obviously, if you read it literally, is to say this song that she's singing is nevuah. She's not just singing, but she's Miriam HaNeviyah singing. But the Medrash grabs onto this. Take a look at source number 6. Vatikach Miriam HaNeviyah achos Aharon. Miriam the Neviyah, the sister of Aharon, takes the drum. V'lo achos Moshe. Gemara asks, she wasn't Moshe's sister. Amar of Nachman Amar Rav, Shehisa misnabok shehi achos Aharon. The answer is, she was a Neviyah when she was just Aharon's sister, before Moshe was born. She had a nevuah when she was Achos Aharon. What does that mean? Vomeris, she said, Asida imi shateled bein sheoshias Yisrael. Just like we saw in the Sifri, and not in the Sifri, in the Gemara in number 3. She said, my mother is going to produce a son. He is going to redeem Israel. Ubashah shenolad, and when Moshe was born, Nismale kol habayis kulo orah, the house fills with light. That's the idea of kitovu. Amar Aviyah ben Ashkal Rosha, her father, gives her a kiss on the head. Amar Lo, and he says, Biti, Niskayma Nevuaseich, look at that, your prophecy is fulfilled. V'kemen Shishlichuhu LaYor, but then they had to throw him in the river. So Amar Aviyah betavchal Rosha, so her father slapped her. V'amar Lo, and he said, Biti, Hechan Nevuaseich, where's your prophecy now? Hainu Dichsiv, and that's why the Pasuk says, V'tesatzabachoso merachok lidde'ah, that she stood at a distance to know what was going to be with Moshe. It doesn't say she went there to guard him. She went to see what's going to happen. What does that mean? Ladas ma'yehe b'sof nevuasah. She wants to see where the nevuah is going. So what this Gemara is building on is the Hanavi'ah Achos Aharon. Right, that's a key piece. Now, I actually realized, did I not bring on the sheet the key piece of the Gemara? Huh. Yeah, I didn't bring it. I'm missing a key piece of the Gemara. Go figure. Okay, so I'll say it outside. But the other piece of the Gemara is the one that we've already alluded to, which is that Amram has separated from Yocheved. Right? Amram separates from Yocheved, saying, why should we produce children just so that they should die? And she says, you're worse than Paro, because Paro is only preventing the birth of baby boys. You are preventing the birth of all of them. So that's coming from this Vayikachas Bas Levi, that he married her. It must be they had been married, and they had separated, and now they reunited, and that was connected to her being a Nevi'ah when she only had Aharon as a sibling.
It's still interesting that they use this description here for Miriam, like 80 years later when she's at the sea, to say that all those years ago she was in Nevi'ah.
Well, keep in mind what the Nevi'ah was. And keep in mind when they became aware it was a Nevi'ah.
Actually,
Mary
mentioned before?
No, hang on. I think
now,
this is really important.
Yeah. Actually saved them.
It's exactly. Now she's in Nevi'ah Achos Aharon. For 80 years, they're all like, what were you talking about? Your brother disappeared off into Never Never Land, right?
Oh, this is the end of the story.
Now she's in Nevi'ah. So I think it actually works. Yeah.
She's been one since she's been Aharon's sister. Like our sister, not just now, Moshe's sister, since then she's one.
Right.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But is Miriam's name mentioned before?
What do you mean, at all?
When is she first mentioned?
I mean, she is identified.
Oh, when she stands by the.
It's about Esavach Hasome Rachok. I'm trying to remember whether. Esavach Hasome Rachok, they may ask a low. But Tomer Lo Bas Paro. So she says to her. But no, it doesn't. I don't know if it actually mentions her by name. Right. I don't know if it mentions her by name there.
This is the first time any other has mentioned her name.
Right.
Sounds like Kriyas Yamsov.
So that's the question: is where does her name show up earlier?
It's so nice to learn the background of, like, we all know these midrashim, but like, why they said them.
Right.
I never put them together.
So that's where the Medrash is getting this idea about Amram and Yocheved separating and her key role within it. So we now have two roles for. I'm just making a note on that. The Nevuah only being valid now, I think, is really interesting. I didn't thought about it that way. We have two roles for her now. She is the midwife who defies Paro. And she's the one who rebukes her parents about their separation and gets them to rejoin. And her nevuah comes true later on. She is also the one who stands by the Yor to see what's going to happen to Moshe. And also the one who tells Paro's daughter that she's going to have she is the one who tells Paro's daughter that she's going to get a midwife from among the Jews, which of course turns out to be Yocheved. In number seven, there's the actual psukim that I was trying to remember. But yes, she's only called Achoso. She's only called his sister, right? They put him in the river. She stands from afar, and Bas Paro goes down to bathe in the river, and you see the story. She sees the kid. She says, "This kid is a Hebrew." And the sister says to Bas Paro, and so on. Bas Paro also doesn't get a name here.
Right?
I mean, no, later on, she beats
him. Is it the same idea? No name like this could be anyone. It's the Bas Levi.
Precisely. That's the idea. So you have three stories now, right? You have her standing by the river as well and going to get a midwife to take care of Moshe. And then your fourth story is at Yam Suf, when she is unafraid to lead the women in song. Right? That's a daunting thing to do. Moshe just led everybody in song, and now you're going to stand up there and say, I'm Moshe's equal, is essentially what she's... I mean, she's not really saying that because her song is his song. She's not like composing something new. She says Shiru Lashem Ki Ga'oga, as you see in number 8. But nonetheless, that points, I think, to a degree of fearlessness as well, maybe helped by the fact that she's his sister. And then, when you turn the page, you get to number 9, which you knew had to be coming here, which is not her finest moment. Source number 9. Vatadaber Miriam v'Aharon b'Moshe al odos ha'isha kushis asher lakach ki isha kushis lakach. Miriam and Aharon spoke regarding Moshe about the isha kushit, literally Ethiopian woman he had taken because he had taken an Ethiopian woman. Of course, we know that Tzipora is not Ethiopian. Tzipora is from Midian. They're very different places, leading to all sorts of midrashim that try to explain what was going on. Was it that Moshe, in his missing years, went off to Ethiopia, became a conqueror, and married somebody from Ethiopia? Was it that it's a reference to her skin and that she looks like she's from Ethiopia? All sorts of different explanations that are offered. Rashi that it means that she's beautiful. But the side note here, what is it that she is supposed to have said about Moshe?
That
he separated from her. What's the basis for saying that that's the Lashon Hara? Asher Lakach, twice. Right? They spoke about Moshe because of the Isha Kushit Asher Lakach. Ki isha kushit lakach. What are those last four words doing in the sentence?
Well, it could be kind of saying that it was a fact that she wasn't actually saying anything else in her, like those were the facts.
But then you know that from what you said, ala dor isha kushit asher lakach.
That could be what she said.
That he took an isha kushit.
Yes. Yeah,
right.
She said that he took an isha kushit,
right.
But she actually wasn't isha kushit, it's kind of saying.
That's weird.
It's not just her opinion. Like, for whatever kushis mean, if it's something negative, it's saying it's, she actually was.
Right.
But still, lashon hara.
Right. One way to look at it would be, and I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're saying, Dina, that she said he took an isha kushit, and that's the lashon hara. Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
Leave us as now.
I was saying that he is saying because that's what she did. Like, she said that she did it because she did it.
Like it's a fact. And she's not ugly, and it wasn't nice for her to say that, but that's what she said. But it's like saying.
So the term is like validating.
She was ugly.
So the term is validating.
Yeah, no, but it's still wrong that she said it.
Interesting. I guess you could. I mean, I'd be stuck wondering why. Like, why would the Torah chime in on that, especially when it's going to criticize her for saying it? Oh, by the way, what we're saying is true. The word key is not really because.
Right.
The word key has a lot of different meanings. It's sort of one of these multi-purpose prepositions. The Gemara is fond of saying there are four different words that key could mean. But the general take here is that it's saying that the Lashon Hara was about the Isha Kushit Moshe had married. And what she's saying is, Isha Kushit Lakach. And now my question is, so what? Is it a statement that she's upset that he took an Isha Kushit? That's one way to take it. What's the weakness in taking it that way?
What's the weakness in what?
What's the weakness in saying that she's criticizing Moshe for marrying an Isha Kushit? Why doesn't that make any sense?
What's wrong with marrying Isha Kushit those times?
Okay. Well, it's post-Matan Torah already.
Yeah, but Tzipora.
Tzipora was pre-Matan Torah. But think about the chronology. Why doesn't this make any sense?
He's already married to Tzipora.
When did he go back to
her?
Because he married Tzipora how many years ago? 60?
So why is this coming up now?
Yeah. Mm. And certainly if it's an Isha Kushit for like Moshe's missing years, it's still ages ago. You're in Baal Oscha by now. They've had Matan Torah. They're about to have the Meraglim. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The chronology doesn't work. So that's one of the pieces that the Medrash picks up on.
No, of why they go back to the
other. Is that it's not about marrying her. It's about separating from her. He had Lakach. He had married her. And then now he's no longer with her. The other piece the Medrash is picking up on is the criticism that's given to Miriam. Right? When Hashem says to Miriam and Aharon, you're not Nevi'im like everybody else. I speak to Moshe directly. And that's understood as a statement that Moshe is justified in what he did. What he did being separating from her. there are more pieces to this. This isn't meant to be a shiur about the Lashon Hara itself. There's a lot more to talk about with it. Maybe when we get to Baal Oscha, we can talk about this in greater depth. But because we'll all remember by then.
Is there a mention that she says that to both parents, to her parents and to her brother also?
That she says what?
Oh, like
that's her thing. Like, reunions. That's so nice. She's like a chakra. But it's a specific kind of chakra.
Yeah.
She's
actually like a marriage.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah.
Why are there these? Why didn't she just say straight out what she said?
Well, if we're going to criticize them for saying it, maybe it's not like we want to now report it. It's kind of weird. Like, we're going to present now in the Chumash what they said that we're criticizing them for saying. Maybe that's why. I don't know.
Well, even though there's a whole Hashem is trying to, like, water it down.
Yeah. By the way, parenthetically, Ibn Ezra notes that Aharon also gets tzaras. It's not just Miriam who gets the tzaras.
He listens.
Sorry? Yeah, he's a participant in all
Shema.
Because she has it last longer. Well, she instigated, but because she instigated, it lasts longer, lasts for 7 days. Aaron's is there, because the Pasuk says, Vayichar Av Hashem Bam. Hashem's anger, which is what we understand to be what inflicts the Tzaras, is upon them, not only upon her. But Miriam is the one who has it for 7 days and is outside the camp, and the camp has to wait, and that's why it becomes her thing. And
I just wonder why we're allowed to talk about it. Like, that's from her quest.
I know. I keep thinking of that also.
Yeah.
And that's the answer.
Like,
if you come to the 9 o'clock shiur tomorrow morning at at Heroes and Villains, you'll hear me talk about that more, because that's one of the questions. The overview shiur, I want to talk about what gives us the right to label somebody a hero or a villain.
Right, altogether.
So that's the 9 a.m. I want to be bright and early. In terms of this story, just looking at the story itself, granted that she and Aharon are wrong, because God says so, and that's usually the last word on things like that, nonetheless, it speaks to the same lack of fear. In other words, I would be intimidated to say anything about Moshe. Right? I don't even know him. I would be intimidated to say anything about Moshe. But she thinks something is wrong. And it's not just, an internal judgment. But she says to Aharon, our younger brother Moshe has done this, and I think it's wrong. Because if it's not a criticism, then I don't understand anything that's going on in the story. So she is presented now in 5 stories as taking an active role and not being afraid of the status quo, and not being afraid of people who are in power. She wasn't afraid of Paro. She wasn't afraid of Amram and Yocheved. She wasn't afraid of Paro's daughter or whoever, whatever was going to happen there at the river. She's unafraid of Moshe when she leads them in song. She's unafraid of Moshe again when she criticizes Moshe for what he did with Tzipora. And then one more medrash, which I would have loved if they would have taught it to us in school, but I didn't know it then. Take a look at the Sifri in source number 10. Zachor Eis Asher Asa Hashem Alokech LeMiriam BaDerech B'Tzeischem MiMitzrayim. Right. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam when you were leaving Egypt. Bishas Geulaschem, during your redemption. Ela Shatala Akasuv BeMiriam LeLamdecha SheKol Zman SheHayu AdeGalim Nosim Lo Hayu Holchem Ad SheMiriam MakDemakdemes LifNehem. The Medrash is bothered by the words at the end of the pasuk. Medrash is bothered that it says, remember what Hashem did to Miriam on your way when you left Mitzrayim. Again, it wasn't when you left Mitzrayim. You had more than a year go by since you left Mitzrayim. Right? You know that because Parshas Baal Oscha is the Parsha with Pesach Sheni. They bring the Karban Pesach again the following year, and then there are those who are Tmeim, and they say, why should we lose out? And they get Pesach Sheni. And then you have this story. So, you are now a year plus since you left Mitzrayim. Why are you saying what Hashem did to Miriam when you left Mitzrayim? It doesn't make any sense. So the Sifri says, to teach you, Shekol Zman Shohayu HaTgalim Nosim, as long as the flags moved, Lo Hayu Holchim, they didn't go, Ad Shemiriam Makdemes Lifnehem, until Miriam went first. And they quote a pasuk, V'cheinu Omer, V'ashlach Lefanecha Es Moshe Aharonu Miriam. In Micha, when Hashem describes all the wonderful things he did for us in the Midbar, he says, I sent before you Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam. So Miriam is there traveling at the head of the nation. What's the image of traveling at the head? What does that convey?
She's held
a leader. A leader, an inspiration. Like, everybody looks forward and they see, you know, Miriam at the head.
So like a protector.
A protector, exactly. That was the last word I was going to use on it. It's, you know, she's looking out for them. This is really, I think, a fascinating image. And now you see, Nechama, what I meant when I said that she's in so many different stories. But I want to go back to Miriam going to the river. I think there's more to be said about what she does there. Take a look at the Mishnah in Sota in number 11. And this Mishnah in Sota is a classic. It's talking about the issue of Midah Keneged Midah, that everything that that one does, Hashem responds measure for measure. So, Miriam Himtina la Moshe Shah Achas. Miriam waits for Moshe for just an hour. An hour doesn't mean literally. The point is, as I translated, a brief time. Shenamar batei satzavach osomei rachok. Lefichach nisakvu la Yisrael zayin yamim bamidbar. Therefore, everybody waits for her for 7 days in the midbar, as the pasuk says, v'ha'am lo nasa ad he'aseik Miriam. They didn't travel. And the Rambam brings this. If you take a look at number 12, he does not look at it as Miriam trying to find out whether her nevuah is going to come true. It's the more literal read. Miriam is protecting him. So take a look at number 12. The Rambam, at the end of his laws of Tumas Psaras, Hisbonenu ma'ira le Miriam hanevi'ah. Examine or contemplate what happened to Miriam. Shedibra be'achia shayisa gdola menu b'shanim. She spoke about her brother Moshe. She was older than him. V'gidalto al birkeha, she raised him on her lap. V'sikna ba'atzma, la'tzila minayam, she endangered herself to save him from the sea, meaning with this basket. That's what the Rambam thinks is going on. She wants to save him from the Yor. V'hilo dibra b'ginuso, and she wasn't trying to mock him. Ella tasa, but she made a mistake. She shvato l'sha'ar nevi'im. She equated him with other prophets. V'hulo yifidah called Varma Ela. Moshe didn't even care. Shenemar v'yish Moshe anav me'od. Because right there on the spot, the Torah says, you should know, Moshe was very humble. V'afa pichein, and yet, miyad nan shabitzaras. She gets punished anyway. What the Rambam is trying to do here is not, his context is not Miriam's story. His context is Saras. And he's trying to say, look how bad Lashon Hara is. Miriam does it in the most benign way possible. This is her brother she took care of. This is her brother who's her younger brother, right? That gives older siblings a certain license. Moshe didn't care. And yet, she gets Saras for it. Kavachomer libnei adam harishrim hatipshim shemarbim ladaber gedolos v'niflaos. He says, how much more so, people who really speak Lashon Hara. The Rambam plays down the Lashon Hara because she wants to save Moshe. Right? That's what he thinks she's trying to do, not to confirm her nevuah.
But also that, I think, would explain how she, I won't say chutzpah, but how she was able to speak against her brother, or because she felt, look what I've done for you. But also, it's an older sibling. It's not like it's a contemporary or somebody who he needs to worry that's going to, you know, beat him or ulterior motives. I'm your older sister, and that's why she felt like she could do that more to protect. And
I mean, it's certainly, you know, why we understand it to be benign. It's not a Korach trying to challenge Moshe. And he presumably understands that. Yeah. But what gives her the confidence to think that she could do this? Not the Lashon Hara. The business of going to the Or. Right? The Egyptians want all the baby boys dead. What she's, you know, as was said, 6 years old. They granted she could be an apprentice to a carpenter somewhere. Fine. But what gives her the impetus to do this?
I think it's her nevuah.
So we could look at it and say that it's the nevuah. And that's where I'm going. But I want to mention a couple of ideas first. But then we'll come back to the nevuah. It's just, to me it's fascinating because Yocheved doesn't go. You know, Yocheved stays home. Now, maybe she can't bear to see, you know, what she thinks is going to happen. That could be why. But it's interesting. I brought you on the sheet for number 13, Josephus in his Antiquities of the Jews. Look what he says. And we're going to come back to Josephus later, and you'll see why I'm quoting this. Miriam, the child's sister, passed along upon the bank over against him as her mother had bid her, to see whither the ark would be carried.
Where does he get that from?
Yeah, where does he get that from? Why does he say that Yocheved must have sent her? So we're going to come back to Josephus and what he's trying to do here. It's not random. He has an agenda. But the answer seems to be, as we said, that it really is tied to the Nebuah. Again, the Rambam's read is not that it's tied to the Nebuah. The Rambam's read is that it's to protect him. But the Gemara's read was that it was tied to the Nebuah. So I think we need to go back to the question of what Nebuah really is in order to understand why that drives her to go to the river. On one level, Nebuah is a message that Hashem sends to somebody to get a job done. Right? Hashem wants Hagar to do this, so Hashem sends her a malach with a message. Hashem wants Abraham to do that, he sends a message to Abraham. But, generally speaking, that's not the way we view Nebuah. Nebuah represents a relationship with Hashem. That's what Nebuah is really about. If you take a look at the Gemara Nedarim in number 14, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashvish Chinaso Ela HaGibor VeAshir VeChacham VeAnav, that you don't get to have Hashem be manifest upon you unless you have four traits. Gibor, powerful. Ashir, wealthy. Chacham, wise. Anav, humble. Worth noting, of course, Pirkei Avos, Perek Daled, Mishnah Aleph. Ezu, Chacham, Ezu, Ashir, Ezu, Gibor, right? That's that's building on this list. Because you look at it and think, well, why is that necessary? Why do you have to be a Gibor? Why do you have to be an Ashir? What's that, you know, what's that for? And you can give answers, but that's what that mission in Pirkei Avos is trying to address.
Eliyahu was wealthy?
Yeah, so the question is, well, it depends on which way you think Ashir. Right? If it's Sameach B'chalko, the truth is he doesn't seem to be so Sameach.
Yeah,
Yirmiyahu
Yishayahu.
Most of the things we know about are there to give a message. Yeah. It's not really about a relationship with Hashem.
Well, like, the assumption is that you
don't. Hashem. Moshe is the only one.
Except that it's understood that the reason why they get this message is because they have a relationship with Hashem.
Right, but it's purposeful.
Yeah.
It's not only about their connection with Hashem. It's with a purpose to give forth.
Right, but anybody could have carried that message. You know, Hashem chooses that. Hashem says to Yirmiyahu, "V'tzer metzorcha babetin yedaticha." Right? It's not...
Right. There is a connection, but it's with a purpose to give a message.
Right.
I guess it's both.
It is. No, but it's... What I'm trying to get at is just that it's not Hashem's hammer. You know, you're in a relationship with a hammer. The hammer is just a tool you use to bang in the nail. It's not like it has any significance to it. There's a connection that's required. The Rambam writes in the seventh parak in Shmona Prakim, his introduction to Pirkei Avos, he says, "Vida ki kol navi lo yisnabe ela achar sheyiknu lo hamalos hasichlios kulan." He says, a navi cannot have nevuah until he has all of the levels that are intellectual, v'rov malos hamidos v'chazako shebahen, and most of the traits of character, and especially hachazako shebahen, the most important traits of character. But beyond those traits that you need, and again, I understand the problem of Nevi'im who don't seem to have had what the Gemara Nedarim details, there's something else that the Kuzari says is needed. Take a look at number 16, please. This is from the Kuzari, Maimar Rishon. The Chaver and the king are having their conversation. Chaver is the Jew. Chaver does not mean chaver. It doesn't mean friend. It doesn't mean person who has accepted the laws of Tumah and Tahara. It's an intellectual term. It's an Arabic term. Logically, the intellect sets the speaking being above all other living things, mandating that he develop an improved character, home, and nation, and act rationally. And what level would you expect to be above this? This is part of the conversation in the Kuzari about the levels of Hashem's creations. The lowest is the domain, the mineral, Someach, the plant that grows, the chai, the living, and then Medaber is the speaking. And the level above Medaber is the Navi. So he says, the intellect sets the speaking being above all other living things. But what would you expect to be higher than the Medaber? So the king says, Chachamim, the level of great sages, that's higher than the Medaber. So he says, no, I'm referring to a level which separates its holder qualitatively. It's not about being just better quantitatively, like a Medaber has knowledge and a Chacham has more knowledge. That's just a better form of Medaber. What I'm looking for, he says, is something that's qualitatively different, like the difference between plant and mineral. This is the level of the indisputable prophet via whom the masses can perceive the joining of God with humanity. That's the idea. A Navi has a special relationship with Hashem. That's what he is. I brought you a number 17. I believe.
Well, that the level above them is there with the Jew.
Yeah, that's what people like to say. People like to say that, but the Kuzari says Navi. If you take a look at number 17, according to this, commenting on that line in the Kuzari, the highest level is not the rational, as was assumed in most of medieval philosophy, but the spiritual, the angelic, belonging into the category of the divine. The highest species of man is not the rational, but the spiritual. And that's a theme within the Kuzari. The Kuzari does not like reason and logic as a way to arrive at truth. He likes to point out that reason is flawed. You can give two people the same data and they'll come to different conclusions using their reason, using their logic. You need to have revelation, you need to have the connection with Hashem. So someone who has the Nevuah relationship with Hashem receives information not like somebody who is, again, the hammer that I mentioned before. The hammer gains no properties from the carpenter who's using it. The Navi receives with it an awareness that the creator of the universe has told this to me. And that gives them a level of certainty. And not every Navi is up to that, right? Yonah can't bear it. Moshe fights it on occasion. But the Navi knows that it's true. As much as a Navi knows that snow is cold and that fire is hot, the Navi knows the information is true. It's not information to the Navi, it's experience. You know what I'm saying? Like when you're a Navi, when Hashem says something to you, you're not carrying a letter. You've experienced what Hashem tells you. Yirmiyahu experiences the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash before it ever happens, because he's heard Hashem describe it to him. Yeshaya has experienced our return to Israel, because Hashem has described it to him. And so what gives Miriam the fearlessness that she exhibits is that she experiences Moshe rescuing the Jews before he's ever born. She's already seen the story play out. She knows where it's going. She knows. She can't believe that it's not going to come true. She has complete and total, and the word faith isn't even the right word, that it's going to be so. And that's what brings her to the river, to save Moshe from harm by the Egyptians, because she knows it's inconceivable that it's not going to work out that way.
That's just a question on that. So other Nevi'im, let's say they've been warning the Israel to do tshuva and all that stuff. Do they know that the harvest is going to happen? Or they're just, this is their message, if you don't do tshuva, and then they could change that?
They know what Hashem has told them. So some Nevi'im only get warnings. Some Nevi'im get, guide the Jews to do this and that, or something's going to happen. As opposed to Yirmiyahu, who's told, it's over. Churban's happening. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
So it's really a test for the Navi himself, between him and Hashem. It's like a relationship between.
Yeah, very much so.
Is that why Miriam's laughing when she's leading the people? Because it's coming true. It's happening. I know this. I can't wait to tell her. You know,
where do you see her laughing?
Isn't that what we said at the beginning?
Well, that was just someone's story, though. I want to be careful. I'm not elevating that to that's just
a
story.
It
could be, but I wouldn't give that story, like, not because the story says it. That's just
no, story. Nothing to do with that killing.
But she was given a Naboo when she was younger that there will be.
She is told my mother is going to give birth to a son who's going to save the Jews. That's the vision. Now, could it end up being somebody else? Because Aaron's born already.
And
this is the message. Now, here I come back to that Josephus line. Because if you go back to 2,000 years ago, and the Jews are living under the Romans, you have certain writers who were Jewish, but they reflected certain Roman ideas. And in the same way that more towards our own time, there are writers who are Rabbanim, who are writing from a Torah perspective, but they try to blend the ideas of Torah with the ideas of modern society. So you had that back in the day also. So Josephus is one of those. Josephus is, of course, a general who is captured by the Romans, or surrenders to the Romans, to be honest. And he writes a lot about the Jews in a way that will be palatable to the Romans. So take a look at number 18, what he writes here, another part of his Antiquities. This is talking about Amram. God stood by him, by Amram, in his sleep, and exhorted him not to despair. For that child, out of dread of whose nativity the Egyptians have doomed the Israelite children to destruction, shall be this child of thine. The one who inspired the Egyptians to kill all the baby boys, that's going to be your son, who's going to go on and save the Jews. Did you notice what Josephus just did?
Yeah, he put the Naboo on Amram.
Right, Amram is now the Navi, not Miriam. He makes Amram the Navi, and she goes to stand by the water, not because of herself, but because Yocheved sent her. He takes the story and he puts it on Amram and Yocheved instead. Interestingly, there's a work called The Biblical Antiquities of Philo, but it's not Philo, it's somebody else, so they call it Pseudo-Philo. Philo was another Jewish thinker from the end of the first century before the Common Era. He was born somewhere around the year 20 BCE, passed away somewhere in the year 50, and this is not him, but somebody attributed it to him. But it was written, they think, like second century Common Era. So look at it. Then the elders of the people assembled the people with mourning and mourned and lamented, saying, an untimely birth have the wombs of our wives suffered. This is when the Egyptians say they're going to destroy the baby boys. Let us appoint us an ordinance that no man come near his wife. It is better to die childless until we know what God will do. And Amram answered and said, it will sooner come to pass that the age shall be utterly abolished and the immeasurable world fall, or the heart of the depths touch the stars, than that the race of the children of Israel should be diminished. Amram is the one, not Miriam, who says that they should have children. And as he goes on, Miriam does not watch over Moshe at the water. What is it that motivates these writers to take Miriam out of the picture?
Well, isn't there a message that talks about Amram telling everyone to do this?
No, it's the opposite. She says to Amram, look what you've done. Now everybody... When Amram separated, they all separated. And she gets Amram to go back together, and then they all get back together. But Amram is described here as leading the charge, and Miriam is nowhere to be found.
Is it like not wanting to give females that much power?
So it could be... It could be as patriarchal. Like, let's take her out of the picture. The weakness of that is that Yocheved is involved in sending her to the water, so there is a woman who is involved.
But she's like a messenger more, Yocheved, and like Amram seems to be like the one who's making the decisions.
Could be.
But these are not real sources. We don't have to take
them. But I want to know what motivates them.
He's just taking credit away from Miriam.
Yeah.
Like, he's not.
I suspect it's because the Romans would be upset at talk of a vision that leads Jews to acts of brave rebellion. You're Josephus. The Romans are trying to conquer the Jews, and they're failing miserably. And they will fail miserably until long after Josephus is dead, right? Until 135, when they destroy Betar. So the Romans would be afraid of a Miriam figure. I think what's going on is trying to make the Jewish story palatable to the Romans. And so therefore they take out the vision that Miriam had, something that's going to lead them to defy Paro, something that's going to lead them to, you know, have children, to go out to the Ur and all of that. They don't want that. They're afraid of that. And so they eliminate the Miriam figure. That's what I suspect is going on. That's my best guess. But coming back to the story itself, the idea of confidence in that kind of a vision is scary. Meaning, we read about it in retrospect, right, and think, that's great, Miriam was unbelievable. But that's because she gets to write history, so to speak.
I mean, like, if you look at it in the context of the Holocaust, it's not...
Right.
People were thinking that then, like, it's better not to bring kids into the world, they're all going to get killed.
So, that question, you know, specifically, but even broader...
What if you have, like, some crazy lunatic who has a vision and it leads them to do something, you know, bold and outrageous, and it doesn't work out?
Right. I mean, you've had people since 1967 who have said, let's destroy the Dome on the Rock. Right? Some have plotted to actually do it. Like, can you imagine where that could have led? What does that mean when someone has this kind of confidence? This is a really scary thing. And in fact, Nevi'im are meant to question. Meaning, even though they have this experience, which I've just described as a faith experience, where they see it coming true, right? Avram questions the destruction of stone. Moshe questions after the Egel. I brought you that in number 20. The Rambam talks about the possibility that a vision that somebody presents could actually be false, right? In 21, the Rambam talks about the possibility that somebody might perform signs and miracles. It's really the Torah in Parshas Re'eh, but the Rambam is commenting on it. And he says, if a vision contradicts Moshe, don't believe it and don't follow it. Even though it's a wondrous miracle, someone performs a sign. Right? It doesn't matter. If it contradicts Moshe, you can't accept it. So you can't say, suspend your intellect. When you really believe it, follow your heart. Right? That's a nice Hollywood type of an idea. But it's not true. But Miriam teaches us to hold this kind of emuna, as the aspiration and the goal.
Yeah, but she had nevuah. It's not the same. Like, sing song, come up and do a movie.
No, what if someone thinks they had a nevuah? Or I see someone who I think is a Navi because they do miracles. The Rambam is saying, somebody might come to you, wave a magic wand, and cause weird things to happen. And that can really happen. Like, that could be. But it doesn't mean that it's real. It's a very scary prospect. On the one hand, we're being told, follow a Miriam. And on the other hand, recognize that someone could pass as a Miriam and not really be legit.
And the truth is, sometimes I feel like the Navi maybe doesn't know either, because Nevuah would come in a dream, or in the Chalom, or in the something. It wasn't clear. Only Moshe got it clear. So, could be that they misinterpreted it, or like...
A scary prospect.
Well, didn't we talk last week a bit about the false Mashiachs? Like,
right.
That's the same thing.
Did they think they were Nevi'im? Some of them probably did. Some of them probably did. I mean, some of them are just out for themselves, but yeah, some of them... I mean, Shabtai Tzvi seems to really believe himself. You know, he really thinks that he's been sent. True. Nonetheless, Miriam is held up as a model, and she's rewarded, right? She's rewarded, we saw, for saving the kids, Vayas Lahem Batim, she has great descendants. We get the well in her merit. The well that we travel with, Be'er Shemiliam, you know, is you know, Miriam's well, based on number 22, where the pasuk says that that when Miriam died, they suddenly had no water. That means the well must have been in the merit of Miriam. And finally, her grandson Bezalel builds the Mishkan. Right? Bezalel is her grandson, and that's number 24. That's funny. I said before that. That Miriam was that Bezalel was an example of merit as opposed to family. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, he's also descendant of Miriam. So maybe that was a bad example. But she becomes an inspiration for people who will follow her down the line, down through the generations, because of that. Yes, there's a certain element of caution that we need to keep in mind, but nonetheless, that zeal that she has, and I think that's the right word, that's what drives a Haggai, that's what drives a Yehudit, whatever one makes of that story. That's something that has driven Jews down through the ages. It all comes back to the fearlessness of Miriam.
Okay. Yeah.